Outdoor Explorer. I'm your host, Lisa Keller. Anchorage hosts multiple women-only sporting events. Kicking off the year is the Alaska Ski for Women, the largest women-only cross-country ski event in North America. Race day this year is February 5th, and registration is open now. In the first half of this week's show, you'll hear my Outdoor Explorer co-host, Adam Verrier, interviewing one of the founding mothers of the Ski for Women, Sally Burkholder. In the second half of the show, I'll be chatting with Molly Milius, the current Ski for Women race director. One note, Adam interviewed Sally on a walkabout right after the first snow in the fall. You may hear him refer to the race as being this weekend. At the time, we were unsure of our air date, so we want you to know that the race is not this weekend, but on February 5th, next weekend. Keep listening for more on Outdoor Explorer.
Hello and welcome to Outdoor Explorer. I'm Adam Verrier. The Alaska Ski for Women is taking place this coming weekend, and today I'm speaking with one of the founders of the event, Sally Burkholder. Sally, thank you for coming out and going for a walk with me here today at Kincaid Park.
Well, the snow makes me think we're approaching time for Ski for Women, and it's a good thing to talk about.
Yeah, and in the interest of full disclosure here, I will admit that we're doing this interview in late October. It's the first snow of the year. We thought we'd get maybe half an inch of snow overnight. We got 3 inches, so we're pretty fired up for ski season. So, Sally, I wanted to ask you, first of all, what was the impetus for the, you were one of the founders of the event, along with Ann Mize. What caused you to want to start this event, the Alaska Ski for Women?
Well, Ann and I were good friends, and we had both retired from teaching early on, which was wonderful. And we would go to ski races in the winter. We'd both been ski coaches, and Ann would come in first and I would come in second, and that would often be it for the women's field. And so we wanted to get more women skiing. And there were plenty of girls in high school skiing, but in our generation, women had not grown up cross-country skiing and certainly not racing. So we sat down and said, okay, how can we get more women skiing? And we decided we'd have a women's ski event. And we thought, okay, how are we going to get them to come out? And so we thought, well, women like to ski with someone else. So that made it become a partner event. And in the first few races, we had categories for mothers and daughters, and categories for friends, and categories for relatives. And every woman who skied in the event had to have a partner, and they had to ski with the partner. So they started together and finished together. And that made it less pressure for competition and more like a deal where you just go out and ski with your friend or relative.
Yeah. Did you think that having people ski with a partner would get people who maybe were more comfortable going to an event like this to bring a friend out and sort of introduce them to the sport? Was that part of it, or did that not really play into the thinking?
That was definitely part of it. And it was interesting because we came up with the three categories. Mothers and daughters was wonderful. We had several mothers after the first event that quietly thanked us for getting them together with their daughters.
Because it was an excuse to do so.
An excuse to do something with their daughters, which, you know, some of them might not do too much with their mothers. And then we added, you know, the relatives and friends, so everybody had a way. You didn't have to have a relative. You didn't have to have a mother-daughter. So so that was very successful, one of the ideas for how to get women skiing. And then I think over the years, of course, we ended up with many more women skiing. We were very surprised the first year.
Yeah, how many did you have the first year approximately?
Well, we ordered 200 bibs, paper bibs, so we didn't have to collect them afterwards. But we had 700 people.
700 the first year?
Yes, I think actually it was 760. And I can't remember what we did, how we got extra bibs, but we drug them up from somewhere. And
wow, that you must have been, were you as surprised by the turnout that first year as I am now, that you had that many people come out to the
South? Yeah, we were just blown away. I mean, we had a registration probably a few weeks ahead, and we realized, wait a minute, we may be in over our heads here. But, you know, we had a committee of maybe 6 or 8 women that helped us organize the event, and they, you know, everybody came through. So had the event, we produced some results, and I think it was, I don't think we put any times on the result sheet. I think we just listed people so they get their name in the paper or whatever.
What do you think, did you have any idea what the motivation was that brought so many women and girls out to this event when you had had so few women and girls skiing in the sort of the standard skiing events that they had men and women? Was it just a different vibe and a different feel? And was that, do you think, what made so many girls and women want to do this event?
It's a combination of a lot of things. It was also the fundraiser for Awake, so people could, you know, there was an excuse to come.
Okay.
Yeah. And raise funds. And then it was timed, but we didn't produce a result list. I think we had a clock running and they could see their time when they finished.
So that sort of reduced the intimidation factor somewhat.
Right.
Yeah.
And we didn't call it a race. We called it a ski, which, you know, some people definitely raced, but.
And was the first year of the Ski for Women, was that 1996? Is that when this event started?
The race was actually in 97. The committee started working in the fall of 96.
Okay.
So.
And that was you and Anne getting together, and you had.
We
how
been,
did the idea come to you?
Well, Anne and I were on a bike tour with a group of 5 or 6 people, and we'd both recently retired, and we were just talking about ski racing and how when we raced, there were very few other women, and how do we get more women to race? And so we just came up with the Ski for Women idea. We also had, we knew there was a Norwegian Ski for Women called the Ingelhami, and but theirs is, I believe, more of a race, although it is just women.
Okay, and that's in Lillehammer, Norway.
That is, yes.
And when did that race begin? I've heard of the event. Do you know how long that's been going? Was it, so that was prior to the Ski for Women that event has been in place?
Oh, yes. I think it'd probably been in place for, I don't know, many, many years.
Many years prior.
Yeah, yeah. And
and so you took some inspiration from that race. You knew that race was happening.
Right.
Okay.
Right. And we figured if there's, you know, certainly women can ski. So, And ski racing was going on in the Anchorage schools at that time, and girls were coming out. The junior and senior high ski teams had girls on them, but the people who were their mothers, when they'd been going to school, if they were at Anchorage, wouldn't have, you know, there wouldn't have been skiing.
Mm. You were, when were you in high school? That was in the 60s, I guess, right?
Right. I graduated from high school in 1964.
And so what opportunities were there for girls in sports? I think Title IX was passed in, 1972 or something?
Right,
The Title IX being the big congressional legislation that affected civil rights and gender equity in sports, or gender, maybe not equity, but maybe brought it closer to equity than to parity than it had been before. It's pretty significant legislation, at least.
I grew up in Massachusetts, and I went to a school which actually did have girls' sports. I played field hockey and tennis, and didn't even know how to ski then. But then I, after college, moved to Colorado, and I taught in a town which had a ski team, and had an alpine and Nordic ski team, but they were just men. Well, the alpine, I think, had women. And that was 1968-69, and the men's coach for the ski team for the boys for that for Aspen, Colorado, was he had been to some national events. And I think that year he had come actually to Alaska for the Junior Nationals, and he had come with a team from Colorado, and he had seen, okay, these Alaskans do have, you know, girls skiing. So when he came back to Colorado, he wanted to start a women's team, and he asked me if I'd help him, and I said, yeah, I don't know what a cross-country ski is, but sure, you know, I'll help. So that's where I learned to ski, cross-country ski. I was there 3 years, and then I actually moved to Alaska, taught at Central Junior High, and was a ski coach there, and we had a co-ed team, boys and girls. And then I went to Bartlett and again had, you know, boys and girls on the ski team. And it was just normal for the teenagers. And there were quite a few girls. It wasn't just a lot of boys and a few girls. It was pretty even. But the people who were more in my generation, you know, 20 years older than their kids, or 30 or whatever, most of them didn't ski because they, like me, had grown up not having skiing as an option. Mm. So anyway, Ann and I just, we wanted to race. We wanted to have more competition. And sure enough, after several years of the Ski for Women event, we did see more women showing up at races. And I can remember the year that PJ, who was organizing the tour of Anchorage, he told us every year, you know, how many women were now racing or how many more women. And the year that it became equal, you know, he had as many women as men signing up for the tour of Anchorage.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
He told us that he thought we'd succeeded.
Yeah.
And well, I think that took maybe at least 6, if not 8 or 10 years of Ski for Women. I can't remember what year that was. PJ would probably know.
Yeah, yeah. I got the impression, I spoke with Alice Knapp recently about her. She's been a Nordic Skiing Association club member for a long time and a ski racer here in Anchorage. She grew up here in Anchorage. And I got the impression from her that perhaps Alaska was further ahead in women's and girls skiing, at least. I don't know about other sports, perhaps in other sports also, but maybe that they were a little bit further ahead of the rest of the country in that regard.
Alaska was way ahead of the rest of the country in terms of girls skiing, just because.
Did you find that when you came from Colorado to here in the early, I guess it was the early 70s, late, early 70s? Did you
76.
76.
Yeah.
Was it striking to you that there were more opportunities for girls sports or girls skiing here in Anchorage or in Alaska than there had been in Colorado?
Yeah. Yeah, it was. Actually, I came here in 73. It was the Ski for Women that was 76. But yes, Alaska, when I came, Alice was actually on my junior high ski team. I was teaching at Central Junior High, and Alice was one of the skiers.
Oh, here comes the groomers. We're out here on the, as I said earlier, we're on the ski trails here on the, when it's first day of snow, so the groomers are coming by, and there they go, grooming the ski trails. Hopefully there's going to be a lot more of this in the next few months, and we'll have a good ski winter. Well, I will take this opportunity to let everybody know that you're listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Radio. I'm Adam Verrier, and today I'm speaking with Sally Burkholder, one of the two founders of the Alaska Ski for Women here in Anchorage. So right around that time, Sally, just before the Alaska Ski for Women was started in 1997. Just a few years before that, there was the Alaska Women's Run, which was the biggest women's running event in South Central Alaska, and I guess in the state. And there was a bit of a reshuffling there, and there was another event that was begun called the Alaska Run for Women, which ended up replacing the Alaska Women's Run. Did that event have any impact on your decision to start the Alaska Ski for Women, or was it a completely separate thing from the Alaska Run for Women?
Neither Ann nor I had participated in organizing the Run for Women, but I think Anne ran in it a few times. I'm sure probably where we came up with the name, Alaska Run for Women, Alaska Ski for Women. So that got a lot of women, and that event grew astronomically over the years, and I think we experienced the same thing, you know.
Yeah.
We had quite a few people the first year, and then it grew from there.
So you and Anne decided, okay, we're going to do this, we're going to try and do this event and see what happens. And so how did you decide to organize it? You had no idea it would be that big. Did you guys just decide, okay, we're doing this thing, the two of us, and we're going to make it happen? Or how did you organize it at the beginning?
Well, we thought of excuses, like I mentioned before, that women had that they didn't ski. They didn't want to do it alone, so we had the partner event, and then I think we had a couple clinics ahead of time for anyone who wanted to come out and ski, maybe at Kincaid in the evening. I think we marked the course ahead of time, and the course we chose is relatively flat. You can't get very flat at Kincaid, but the Ski for Women course is one of the flattest courses you could get for 5 kilometers. And the other thing is we made it short. I mean, 5 kilometers is about as short as you're gonna go for a ski race. So I think we just tried to think of reasons that women had, the excuses they used maybe for not skiing, and we tried to negate eliminate all those problems for them.
Right.
I think we had I think they could get rental skis for either very little or maybe even free at REI and AMH.
Okay,
and
those
first year.
Yeah, and to support the event, they said you can just get cheap skis here.
Yep. And then the other thing was the fundraiser. We figured if we were raising funds for something, that would really help. And the interesting thing was we looked at the ski schedule for the year. And there was one weekend in January where there weren't any races, and there weren't any races in Fairbanks, and, you know, the kids weren't going to be going there. So we said, okay, we'll do it that day. And then we were talking to Beth Bragg, who wrote the sports column for the Daily News at that time, and we were telling her about the event and the date that it was going to be, and she said, isn't that Super Bowl Sunday?
Right, being a sports editor, she would know.
She would know. And we said, well, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, okay, so it's Super Bowl Sunday. It turned out that was a wonderful day to have it because there weren't any other events. Women didn't mind coming to the event. Actually, they were done by the time they went home. They could watch the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
But it stayed. That's the day of the event still.
And it was chosen, initially it was chosen because it was the one blank spot in the event calendar that you could get people to come out in.
Right.
Yeah.
The kids weren't going to be in Fairbanks racing, or the high schools, you know, the club didn't have an event that day.
Yeah.
And anyway, so it was a perfect day and we stuck with it.
And so did you, this was just you and Anne, or did you have a group that you, like a committee or something that you got involved in organizing this thing?
We definitely had a committee, and I can't remember all the names of the people at this point, but there was a committee of five or six people.
And this is a big, currently this is a big, is maybe one of the biggest fundraisers for AWAKE, the Alaska Women's Aid in Crisis Group. It's probably one of the biggest events that they do. It's a big fundraiser for them. Was it the committee that came up with?
One of our committee members suggested, we were saying, okay, who could sponsor this thing? Who should we raise money for? And somebody suggested it. They went and talked to AWAKE people, and they were ecstatic, you know.
Yeah.
They didn't have to do anything, and they were going to get some money.
Right.
Right. And actually, we had some of the meetings in their offices, and over the years, we got to be, they got to be quite dependent on us, and Ski for Women certainly raised a lot of money for them.
Mm. And so that just came out through through people that were... They were associated with the event.
Right.
So over the years, this event has really kind of morphed from something that was initially intended as a way to get women and girls into ski racing into something that's become bigger, more than that. But we also have seen, had a lot of success among in women's sports in the last decade or two. You know, women from Alaska winning gold medals in the Olympics who grew up here. And this event seems to be part of a culture in Alaska of pretty strong women's skiing culture and women's sports culture. It seems like it's been part of a kind of a bigger movement.
It definitely part of a bigger movement. I think if you look around the country, Ski for Women, Colorado started Ski for Women. There's one in the Midwest. There's one in New England. I don't know how many others are. But you hardly need them now because skiing, cross-country skiing, I think is generally thought of as a co-ed sport. There are races for women. There are races for men. There are mixed races. Certainly in the high schools here, I don't know if there are nationally and internationally, but maybe that's coming. I think the women, Ski for Women has done what we wanted it to do. We've got more women skiing. It's grown. It's successful. It's raised a lot of money for a good cause. And I think it's going to just kind of keep rolling along.
Yeah. Well, Sally, thank you so much for coming out and talking to me today. Today I've been speaking with Sally Burkholder, one of the two co-founders of the Alaska Ski for Women here in Anchorage at Kincaid Park. Sally, thanks for coming out and talking to me.
Well, you're welcome. It's fun to think back over the years.
Yeah. Well, I'm Adam Verrier. You've been listening to Outdoor Explorer. Our show today will continue in the second portion of the show with Lisa Keller speaking with Molly Milius, the current director of the Alaska Ski for Women. Thanks for joining us here on Alaska Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Radio.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. Find the show anytime as a free podcast in the iTunes Store or connect with us online at alaskapublic.org.
If you are just joining us, you are listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Lisa Keller. My guest in this segment is Molly Milius, the race director of the Ski for Women, which will be held on February 5th. Welcome to Outdoor Explorer, Molly.
Hi, Lisa. Thanks so much for having me on today.
And I guess I'd like to start by saying, as I've said with a couple of other women, especially, I've known you since you were in high school. And I used to coach you. And it's just so wonderful to see all these young women coming from East High School, which I was an East High grad too. We always have to do that shout out and see so much community involvement coming and from East High School for the women of East High School. And also just, you were a contemporary with Lael Wilcox and you touched her and you touched Keegan and so many other Ariel Tweedo, so many other women who are doing really fantastic things. So it's really good to have you here and be interviewing you. I'm very excited.
I agree. It's fun, a number of decades, I guess at least one decade later to be able to reconnect on this.
Yep. Okay. So let's start with, why don't you tell the audience a little bit about yourself and your involvement with the Ski for Women?
Yeah, thanks, Lisa. I took over the role as director of the Alaska Ski for Women about 3 years ago, which of course 3 years ago was the first year that we had to adapt the event for the pandemic. So that was kind of a crash course in both the event itself and then thinking creatively about how to modify it. But prior to that, I was an enthusiastic participant. I've done the Ski for Women from a young age with friends and with family. And so it was really exciting to move into this role given that long history with the event. I do serve as a volunteer in the director role, so it's not my day job. I work as a community planner and contribute to the community in a number of ways, and this is one of them. So it's been a joy and a privilege to get to serve in the director role for this cool event.
What did, I can't even remember. It seems like it's been forever ago, the first year of the pandemic, but you, so 2020, you managed to have just the regular race because the pandemic hadn't really hit yet.
Exactly. Yeah. The 2020 event was in early February, and that was when, you know, there were hints of a pandemic elsewhere, but definitely hadn't touched Anchorage yet. And so 2021 was the first year where we really needed to adapt the event in order to hold it safely.
And what did you do that year?
That year we went entirely virtual. So we opted not to gather everyone together, but instead we decided to decorate the course. So folks were still able to register. And we did have a really fun course laid out. Previously, there were never course decorations along the way, but the committee worked hard to strategize on ways to make the ski fun, even if people were doing it on their own time. So that included facts about domestic violence prevention and resources in the community. It included fun decorations, including lawn flamingos. We had over 100 flamingos spread out across the course. And we also opened up registration to men so folks could ski with their families. This had historically been a women-only event, and both to enable people to ski with their bubble, and also with the kind of increasing recognition that domestic violence prevention is not a women-only issue, we felt there was value in opening men up to the event. So those were the main adaptations, some of which we've actually continued to carry through until today. But that was the main change, was it was really kind of a virtual event or a ski on your own event.
So my memory, I have to admit, it's been a while since I've done the Ski for Women, but I do not have a memory of the course being hugely decorated. Was that the first time it was like you just went all out on decorations?
Yeah, it was. I don't think had ever really decorated it aside from, you know, start and finish flagging. There were no decorations along the course, and folks really enjoyed it. So that's something we've continued to carry forward. We have a decorations subcommittee who, you know, takes the time to map out and ensure that the course is fun. And so we're sharing that tradition from that 2021 adaptation.
Yeah, see, there's all these kinds of things that happened out of COVID that have made life better in the end, you know, so that seems like one of them for sure.
Yeah, I agree.
So you have some favorite costumes. I pulled this from, I think, your bio on the website. You have some favorite costumes because costumes has always been a big part of this race, hasn't it?
It has. I would maybe even make the claim that the costume contest is more competitive than the timed races are.
So yeah, I think so.
It's one of my favorite parts. I always really look forward to seeing all the costumes that participants show up in on the day of the event. And I've done a number of costumes. My mom and I have done some fun duos. I think we did a tree and a lumberjack one year, and we've been snowy animals. But probably my favorite costume was a Tetris. And actually, I think that was in high school. So a group of women you knew quite well, we were all Tetris pieces, which were created out of large pieces of cardboard and were pretty unruly for skiing in. So we were not fast, but we had a lot of fun.
I think it's cool that you have this involvement as a high schooler too, because when Adam talked to Sally Burkholder, and the race was started, the first race was in 97. And she said that they really wanted to try to get mothers and daughters to compete or to participate together, not compete together. But, you know, this was the one thing that they could kind of get their daughters to come out and do with them, because by the time 97, you know, women were just, I mean, there wasn't any disadvantage to being a woman in the Alaska ski zone, because there were just all these great female skiers and it was just as big a sport as it was for the boys. But then I think it was really cool, like your generation were the ones who were like high schoolers in that kind of in that time zone, and how imaginative high schoolers can be when they put together costumes and do it as a group, and just kind of like the power of that. And this was the great thing about the East High girls during those years, for sure, was just the power of that community together. Is that something that you've really seen, like the high school girls really pick this up and go for the costume thing?
Absolutely. It's fun to see teams come out. We've also had Girl Scout troops. They'll come as a troop. We had a great group last year that actually sewed some of their own costumes.
Oh, wow.
And so that was sort of a team building activity, and it was fun to see them show up. We definitely have families. Last year we had quite a few groups of coworkers where coworkers sign up as a team and come out together. So I think it really is a great bonding opportunity for all sorts of groups of people and communities that come together. But we do have high school involvement for sure. We're looking at recruiting a couple of different teams to help with some of the setup. Some years we've had high schools help kind of lead the kickoff of the party wave. And so definitely a lot of young people that are a part of the event.
Before we move on from you telling us a lot about your experiences with it, I think a group that we don't talk about enough that you are a member of is the Green Grunts. And I cannot remember where we've had we should do a whole hour on the Green Grunts, but tell us about the Green Grunts.
The Green Grunts are a troop of dedicated volunteers who help support the middle and especially high school races here in Anchorage. So they make the events possible. They are all volunteers. They're called Green Grunts because we wear these kind of green poofy jackets. And so definitely a easily recognizable force out at Kincaid. And so it's a group, some of the volunteers have been there probably 20, 30 years. There are some younger grunts, of which I am one of them, who are slowly assuming the role, but it's a really hardworking group and a really fun group to be a part of. So some folks join the Green Grunts after maybe having a kid who goes through the high school races and volunteers and wants to continue volunteering after they graduate. Others, I think, are just looking for a fun way to get out and give back and get outside. So it's a fun group. We sometimes meet for breakfast before heading out to Kincaid. The army of Green Grunts is a important part of our ski community. And many of the volunteers also volunteer for other events. So we'll definitely have some Green Grunts supporting the Ski for Women.
Well, I remember thinking about 10 years ago, because I volunteered at the Ski for Women for many years. And I remember thinking, these Green Grunts are getting pretty old. And there weren't really many young people at that point coming up. So I love to see that there's like this community involvement by your generation coming in there and recognizing that it's, and they're recognizing too, the older ones, we got to pass a torch here pretty quick. So that's great to see that.
It is fun. And to slowly accumulate higher responsibilities. I remember the first year that I was given the privilege of painting the finish line, typically reserved for a more seasoned grunt. And so,
I'm sure that's a very specific way you must do that, right?
Mm-hmm. And I have a little patch of orange fluorescent paint on my shoe to prove it. So.
Oh, perfect. okay, so let's get on a little bit to the event now. So, as was made by Sally Burkholder and Adam, this is the largest women-only cross-country ski event in North America. And then it was really interesting to hear the history, like kind of where they pulled the race from. There's a big race in, I wrote it down, Norway, Lillehammer, that maybe is probably bigger than this event, but they have a ski culture that goes back farther than us, mm-hmm. obviously. But on your big years, like you've had 1,000+ women doing this event, right?
Yeah, I think the years I've looked at, it's exceeded 1,200 is the biggest number I remember seeing. So definitely pretty high turnout and have maxed out the stadium.
How did the virtual event the first year do?
The virtual event far exceeded our expectations. I think folks were maybe feeling a little bit cooped up, we're missing events. And so even though it wasn't maybe the event that folks remembered, I think just the opportunity to participate in something, support a cause. Of course, domestic violence didn't go away during the pandemic, and right. This is a domestic violence prevention fundraiser. So I think folks, you've definitely united around the cause and united around a fun thing to do. And something that they could do safely. So, mm-hmm. Our numbers, I think that year we ended up with over 800 participants, which was the highest number that we had seen in a few years. And I think part of the reason for that is the event happened over 5 days. And so the first day we had a ton of turnout and there was a lot of activity on social media and in the news and where people learned about it. And because the event was continuing, they were able to join for subsequent days. So our numbers continued to go up kind of during the event itself.
And then last year there was a hybrid. It was like in-person and virtual.
Yes, exactly. So we did have the in-person event, but we went ahead and decorated the course a few days ahead of time. And so people that either weren't comfortable skiing in a group or would prefer to stay socially distanced, they had the opportunity to still go out and enjoy the course and kind of avoid the crowds on race day. Mm-hmm.
I just think the decorating the course was brilliant. What a great idea. We're a little bit late for this, but just in terms of maybe next year, if anybody is thinking about it, wants to file it away, is that there are training opportunities before the race happens. So I think it's happening right now. You know, we're talking, the week before we're going to air this, but I think Parks and Rec had a program that was geared towards Ski for Women.
Yeah, Parks and Recreation puts on different classes. There are also a number of really talented local ski trainers and coaches in Anchorage. And so certainly if anyone has questions or wants a recommendation, you know, we have some relationships and are happy to provide resources. And we've also been sharing them periodically on our event Facebook page. So if you're excited about joining, but are a little bit nervous about putting skis on for the first time at the event, there are definitely opportunities to get familiar with skiing before you come out.
And actually speaking of putting skis on, in the past, I was thinking about this too, with the numbers, there have been some challenging years over the past 15 years, maybe because of climate change, right? There's been years where there was just ice and you couldn't even ski.
Yes. And I've been lucky in that the years I've served as director, we've had plenty of robust snow and in fact, maybe slightly colder temps that some of us would have liked, but there definitely have been years where the weather did put a little bit of a wrench in plans and the race organizers adapted the event beautifully. I think one year it turned into a walk, other years they have modified the course somewhat. The Nordic Ski Association has worked really hard to build a state-of-the-art snowmaking system at Kincaid. And so that's really, I think, helped build resiliency across the winter season because it lets Anchorage continue to host events even in those lower snow years. So I think that was a really smart investment. And should we have a low snow year, which it's looking like that's not going to be the case for this event, but in the future, I could see us, you know, needing to adapt and use the snowmaking loop. But I think that was a great investment in Anchorage's future, and we're really lucky to have that out at Kincaid.
So let's go over the distances and the categories. There's quite a few in it. So there are, you can go out and race this if you want to, or you can just do it for fun with your family and friends. So what are all the distances and how are those broken up? Because of course there's two different ways to ski now, which wasn't around when I was in high school. You only skied in one way, but.
Yeah. So we have two different timed events and that's a classic race, which is the more traditional form that folks might associate with cross-country skiing. And that what we call freestyle or skate skiing, which is maybe more like an ice skating motion or a hockey skating motion. So we have those two timed events. And then we have the costume contest, of course, sort of between those two. So we have the two timed events in the morning, we have our costume contest, and then we have what we call the party wave, which is an untimed skiing of the course. So all of those events do the same 4 kilometers out at Kincaid. Kincaid is very hilly, and as Kincaid trails go, this particular course is one of the most gentle, but it is definitely a rolling course. So maybe not perfect for your very first time on skis, but gentle as Kincaid trails go. So those are the two timed events, the party wave. And then we are keeping, much like past years, we are keeping that pre-ski option. We're calling it the friends and family ski. So the main event is happening on Sunday. That's when we have those timed events and the party wave, but folks can go out anytime on Saturday and ski the course on their own with friends and family. So that's another option if people don't want to maybe ski in a crowd.
Are there only two timed event waves, the classic and freestyle, or are those broken down into more waves? I'm trying to remember.
Yeah, just the two. Most people do the party wave, and so our numbers have historically been small enough that we just do the one mass start for the classic and one mass start for the freestyle.
Okay.
We did, until recently, we had a duathlon as well, where folks would ski the classic loop and the skate loop. Mm-hmm. And so they would do 8 kilometers total. We did decide to eliminate that this year. The numbers that participated in that event were pretty low, and we had added all sorts of other elements to this event, like decorating the course, and felt like we just needed to do some simplification. So we did eliminate the duathlon. And so there are just those two timed events now.
And also, don't you think maybe the duathlon really attracted like the super competitive people, which obviously there's nothing wrong with that, but this is more of an event that is associated with not being super competitive. Although I'm sure there are bragging rights for winning the skate and winning the classic and things like that.
But yeah, definitely. I think that's true. We also specifically set up the start times for classic and skate, that if someone was really sad about missing the duathlon, they could actually participate in both of those events. So they could still do both back to back. And, you know, if they were to place top three in both of those, that would be extra bragging rights for having placed in multiple races.
Yeah. Do you know if anybody has signed up for both of them yet?
That's a great question. I don't have that at my fingertips, but we should definitely take a peek before the event.
That I'm sure you will have some.
We do. And definitely bragging rights, but we also do have some fun prizes for our participants. So we have donations from Fishyware. They've donated some dry bags. They're beautiful. They have these fun prints. And then we've got a team of women, Marty and Tracy, who every year have sewn fleece headbands, or we call them crowns, these really ornately fabricated crowns. And actually today I was going to put a post on our Facebook page. So if folks look on our Facebook, they should be able to scroll and see that, those crowns. And so that's,
and those crowns really are like, and those are for like the top finishers, the crowns.
The top three in the two timed events. And so I think that's another fun bonus and wearable, trophy that you get to bring home.
Oh yeah. That'd be super cool. I know you used to have like, because this started like as a partner race, right? And it's not really a partner race anymore, is it?
You know, I don't know that part of the event history, but I know it's always been a very team-oriented event. Mm-hmm.
I remember years and years ago, because I needed a partner, and my sister-in-law and I did it together. So they had all these different partner categories. But that was one thing that Sally said too, is that they started as a partner event because they wanted, it seemed like one of the barriers to women. Now, see, this is fascinating because this is how much times have changed in 25 years, right? Mm-hmm. The barriers to women skiing were women didn't want to go alone. They wanted to be with a partner. And so they started it as a partner race. So if you're going to come, you got to bring a partner, which also is great, like marketing in the beginning, because you double the number of people you're going to get, right?
Exactly.
And now I don't even think that's a deal for women. Aren't afraid to show up, number one, by themselves anymore. And number two, women just come in groups anyway, as teams.
Yeah, definitely. We have eliminated the requirement that you register as a team or with someone else, but I would say the majority of participants are coming as part of a group or at least as part of a pair.
Is there any kind of team competition beyond the costumes? The costumes is definitely... I don't know if are there individual and team awards for the costumes?
We just have three categories. There's no individual category. We have a team category. So best team costume, best pair costume. We call that the dynamic duo costume. And then we have a costume for kids, and that's the most creative kiddo costume. And that can actually be an individual kid or a group of kids that are coordinating their costumes together.
And then when it's time for the costume parade, which happens right before the party wave, right?
It does. Yeah. So that kind of breaks up the timed events. And then we just have a parade around the stadium. So they do a loop around the stadium. Really fun to be a spectator and a participant. And so they'll do a little loop. We're recruiting a cast of judges, costume contest judges, and those judges make the selections. And then we announce the winners, and then the party wave kicks off.
Yeah, I've been up in the timing building watching that parade, which is really fun. It's really fun to be inside the timing building because it's warm and there's donuts. So,
yep, that's probably the best vantage spot in the whole stadium.
Yeah, yeah, but it is fun watching that parade, definitely. Okay, so this is out of Kincaid, in case we haven't made that clear at this point. But it just occurred to me too, there's probably always some sort of parking issue at Kincaid. So how's the parking working?
Yeah, the past 2 years, because so many folks participated on their own time, we didn't really have to worry about parking. However, we're anticipating more people coming out on Sunday. And so we are working with Premier. Premier Alaska Tours has graciously donated a shuttle driver and bus. And so we will have shuttle service from Kincaid Elementary. And so, you can go straight to Kincaid and cross your fingers and hope you find a spot, but we're encouraging people to instead carpool from Kincaid Elementary or take the shuttle from Kincaid Elementary. And that's kind of right there as you start to drive down just past Tasty Freeze. You've got the elementary school right there, and that will be the shuttle pickup spot.
And I'm sure there's some people who probably ski in. I mean, if you parked at the Raspberry Lot or even over at Joffre, you could ski in, or if you live in that neighborhood.
Yep. And we've even had some of our volunteers have skied over to help to avoid parking. So that's certainly an option as well.
So in case we haven't hit this yet, so it's the main event starts at 10:30 a.m. on Sunday, February 5th. Mm-hmm. But we did talk about what the day before. So the decorating starts at 10 a.m. the day before on Saturday, February 4th. And I would like to talk about the role of men. So on February 4th, that's like anybody, male, female, kids, adults, right? They can go
exactly.
Ski the course.
Yep. Anyone can participate on Saturday and do the course on their own.
But then on Sunday, the races are for the women, but there is a special plea out there for men to come help and volunteer, right?
It's true. We would love for men to still come on Sunday and play a volunteer support role. We also allow kids 12 and under to join, boys or girls, to join for the party wave. So the timed events are women only. Party wave is women and anyone under the age of 12. And then of course, men, we celebrate them as our volunteers. We have a waxing team. Toco has a tent out there and they volunteer to wax skis. And so we're always looking for a couple of additional hands to help the waxing team. And there are many other opportunities to volunteer. So we love for the whole family to come and kind of serve those different roles.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's kind of dive into registration a little bit. So this show is going to air on Thursday, January 26th. So the race is 10 days out, but there's a bunch of critical registration information that people need to know because there's still opportunities to sign up right now. And of course, Anchorage is a community of procrastinators. So, you know, everybody who is a race director is sweating it out until all those numbers start to come in.
It's true. Almost everyone, our data consistently shows almost everyone registers the week of the event,
yep,
regardless
exactly.
of how hard we work to get the word out earlier.
It really is crazy. It's just everybody here is a procrastinator, it seems. So, registration is happening right now.
It is. It's open. It opened on the first of the year, and it is online, or at least you can register online through February 1st. And so up until February 1st, that's probably the easiest way to register is to go online. We also have bib pickup happening on February 2nd, and you can come in and do in-person registration if you'd rather avoid the online registration or if you miss the deadline. So February 1st, we're doing in-person registration. We are also going to invite folks to register on Saturday or Sunday. However, if you are registering, that's a little bit late for the timed event. So for that, you can only register for the party wave if you're doing the late registration. And that's just because we need to get our start list configured.
So that means if you register on Saturday or Sunday, you can only do the party wave?
Exactly.
Okay. And then where are the bib pickups?
The bib pickup on Thursday is happening at the Midtown Mall. That's previously the mall at Sears. Now I guess it's the mall between Cars and REI. So the space is being donated to us. So we'll be in one of the vacant store spaces there for bib pickup. That's happening Thursday, February 2nd from noon until 7. And then also there will be late bib pickup at Kincaid. And that's also where the late registration will be happening. That will be at Kincaid. On Saturday, it will be in the Timing Building, which is the blue building and the stadium. And then on Sunday, it will be happening up at the chalet.
Okay. And then, of course, all of this is on the Ski for Women website, which I'll put a link to on our Outdoor Explorer page. So
exactly. Yep. Yeah. All those details are there. And we'll also be emailing out details as folks register, so they have the information at their fingertips.
So let's talk a little bit about that this is a triple patch event. And if people maybe are not familiar with what the triple patch is, but we live in this very unique community that has all these events for women. So the triple patch event award was originally a patch that was made if you did the Alaska Ski for Women, the Gold Nugget Triathlon, and the Alaska Run for Women. And then the Bike for Women was added after that, because we have four, and sometimes we have a mountain bike for women. So it's pretty amazing. So you get the triple patch if you do the Ski for Women, Gold Nugget, and Run for Women, and you get a gold star if you do all four.
And I think the one correction to that, I think you just have to do any three to get the triple patch, and then you get the star if you do the fourth event.
You have to do one of those three?
Three of the four to get
three
the
of
patch.
The four. Oh yeah. 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 Yep. Sorry. Yep. Yeah. I understand. Right. You have to do three of the four. And then if you do all four, you get the gold star. Yeah.
Exactly.
And so I was kind of looking at, like, in 2022, I just saw somebody post this, that 204 women did all did three of the events, and 59 did all four, which is pretty impressive. So this is like a big question a lot of women have when they start doing this, is how do they know when and how they're going to get the triple patch? Like, I know that all the databases are melded. There's some data person who's really good at this, obviously, good at Excel worksheets. And so do you have any information about the triple patch event, how people get connected into it?
Yeah. So each of the different event directors, after our event, we send our registration information to the organizer. She compiles that and sort of identifies who qualifies for the triple patch. And from there, does the distribution of the patches. I know Turtigan Training is the sponsor for the triple patch. However, the person that's actually organizing it, Nikki, is a volunteer. And so I would say first, just to recognize that she's doing this out of a desire to support women being active in Anchorage. And so, so I think that there's not a really specific time that I'm aware of. I think it typically goes out in the fall. There is a email. That's the way that I typically connect with Nikki. And so if folks have questions or feel that they qualified for a patch, but maybe didn't receive it or want to check about their eligibility, I would recommend reaching out to Nikki. I think that's triple patch finisher. Let me check on that before you add it.
Okay. Yeah. I can put that as a link too. So,
okay. Yeah. I think let's include that as a link and I'll follow up on it.
Okay. And then you can send that to me and I'll make sure that's included. Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah, that is, and I'm blanking on the name of the woman who first started that. It was not Nikki, but I remember when it was first started, because I was involved with the Gold Nugget and the Run for Women at that time. So, so it's a pretty cool thing. Okay. So, this is a fundraiser that, you know, Sally, when she talked, didn't say that that was the main reason that they started it, but they really wanted to connect it to something that was important to women and to men, although women bear the brunt of domestic violence, and children. So there's a couple of ways that this event raises money. Some money goes to the Nordic Ski Association for being an amazing host and having all the equipment and everything. And then there's also a silent auction. Tell us a little bit about silent auction.
Yeah, we have a silent auction every year, and all of the proceeds from that go to support the cause. We have an amazing silent auction volunteer coordinator who I think this year has already recruited like 70 prizes. So those will all be on display at the bid pickup and also at the chalet at Kincaid on Sunday. Although the bidding itself will be done virtually. We did that last year and it worked really well. So ultimately the proceeds do go out. 20% goes to the Nordic Ski Association, and then the rest, the 80% of the proceeds that we raise are given out via a grant process at the end of the year. And by the end of the event, I should say.
Yeah. And by the proceeds, do you mean the entry fees or do you mean the silent auction plus the entry fees?
Yeah, it's the total proceeds from the event. So we do, you know, subtract out the cost of grooming and the cost of insurance and, you know, supplies, things like that. And so once we porta potties, all the essentials that are a part of an event. And so once we have our net proceeds, 20% go to NSAA and then the rest go out via the grant process.
Okay. And tell a little bit about the grants. I do have a list of what the Ski for Women is all about and the kind of criteria for contributing to groups when the grants are awarded. But tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah. So as you noted, the grants go to support domestic violence prevention in Alaska, not necessarily just in Anchorage. So we do invite grant applications from all over the state. This past year, we released $26,000 in grant funds. And so it's a pretty significant contribution toward domestic violence prevention in Anchorage and Alaska, which is great. Historically, we have given out a larger grant to AWAKE, Abused Women's Aid in Crisis. They've been a longtime recipient of the event. They've also been really active in volunteering and helping make the event possible. So for a long time, they've been a key benefactor, but we also have a smaller grant that's given out every year. That's a more competitive process. And quite a few different organizations have received that grant over the years, as you've noted. This most recent year, Covenant House, their Passage House program is the recipient of that Tier 2 grant.
Which I thought that was great when I read about that. It's for a transitional living program for young women ages 16 to 22 and their babies. And it's actually been in operation for 30 years. And I have a little bit of connection to that because my daughter, who has moved to Tucson after she grew up here, but that's the population she works with is young pregnant women. So with a group called Arizona Youth Partnership. So little shout out to them. So it sounds like kind of, I don't know if they're doing transitional living, but she works one-on-one with young women who are pregnant and weren't intending to be pregnant, and whatever their decisions are, she works forward with them. So yeah, so that's a really important program, and it makes a huge impact on those young women when they come back to her, you know, to talk to her and thank her for the support she gave them. And I'm sure it's the same with the Covenant House program.
It is an amazing program. And I should mention, there are a lot of really great programs and resources available for women and for victims of domestic violence prevention, victims of domestic violence in Anchorage and in Alaska. And so part of the course decorating, while a lot of it is fun and whimsical, we've actually started to add some posters that have information about domestic violence, what it looks like. Maybe it manifests itself in ways you don't really expect. And so both information on the signs to look for, and also information about prevention resources in Alaska.
Oh, that's great. Well, Molly, this has been fantastic talking to you. I love seeing you as an adult and contributing so much to our community. So thanks so much for joining me today.
Wonderful. Thanks so much, Lisa, for having me. It's been a pleasure.
That's it for today's show. Thanks to our guests, Sally Burkholder and Molly Milius. You can find pictures and links to the Ski for Women on the Outdoor Explorer page on alaskapublic.org. The show is produced by Eric Bork. My name is Lisa Keller, and from all of our hosts here at Outdoor Explorer, thanks for listening, and we'll see you outside.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. Theme music is by Portugal, The Man. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect the station or its underwriters. You can find Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and in your favorite podcast app. To see what's coming up on Outdoor Explorer and add your voice to the conversation, go to our website at alaskapublic.org.
Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.